This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The events at the Capitol in the past week, beginning with a violent mob and ending with the second impeachment of President Trump, have exposed deep rifts within the Republican Party.
We not only have an economic imperative to act now, I believe we have a moral obligation.
I'm Jim Sachs of CQ Roll Call, and this is The Transition, a special edition of Political Theater. It is Friday, January 15th. We are less than a week away from inaugurating the 46th President of the United States, Joe Biden. And tonight, we want to explore what's next. What's in store for the GOP? The Republican Party has really taken a beating the last few weeks, and most of those blows were self-inflicted. They lost the Georgia runoffs and, with them, control of the Senate. Then President Donald Trump held his Stop the Steal rally, which inspired his supporters to storm the Capitol. It was a sad, deadly affair that still could have been even worse. And in its wake, the House impeached Trump for a second time. It was the first time in U.S. history, and this time, 10 Republicans voted yes. While some Republicans had denounced Trump prior to last Wednesday's violence, the impeachment vote was the first real sign that we've seen that the party might be ready to divorce itself from this abusive relationship that, after 4 years, has left them out of power in Washington. It's made me think of something Republican Senator Lindsey Graham tweeted back during the 2016 primaries, before he had locked up the nomination. He said, quote, "If we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed, and we will deserve it." Today, Graham is the president's leading defender in the Senate, where he is urging his colleagues to support Trump in his upcoming impeachment trial. I suspect that most Republican officials are like Lindsey Graham. They just don't know how to let go. As Trump's presidency goes through its violent death throes, Joe Biden's is about to begin. And America's oldest ever president has a lot of work to do. Between the pandemic, a shaky economy, extreme inequality, and an ongoing racial reckoning and right-wing extremism, Joe Biden might be facing the most daunting set of challenges a president has faced since FDR. So today, we look to the future, and we have two great guests to help guide us. CQ Roll Call's chief correspondent, Niels Lesniewski, will tell us what's next on the incoming administration's agenda. But first, our elections expert, Nathan Gonzalez, will help us figure out what lies ahead for the GOP. Nathan, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So where do the Republicans go from here?
Well, first, how long do we have, Jim? Because this is a huge question. The first thing I think we need to think about is, you know, what the Republican Party has become over the last 4 or 5 years, and it has become the following of a person rather than a following a set of issues or ideological goals. And I think that, you know, parties, people can do with whatever they want to their party, but that makes a transition difficult. And I think that this transition, a messy transition from President Trump to someone or something else, was always going to be messy. But I don't know that very many of us really anticipated what happened with the invasion of the Capitol. And so that's just making things all the more complicated in the final days of the Trump presidency. I think one of the key things is to remember is that this coalition. The president has built a coalition that has helped him win. I'm not sure it is easily transferable to someone else. And this is not a unique dynamic to Donald Trump. It is I think President Obama struggled with it. You know, President Obama did well when he was on the ballot. When he wasn't on the ballot, Democrats got pounded in a couple of midterm elections. But again, with Trump, everything is just heightened. you know, was just turned up to a different volume and heightened even more. And now you have Republicans fundamentally wrestling with how far to go against the president when the base of the Republican Party, the voters of the Republican Party, a majority of them are still loyal to President Trump. They like him more than they like their individual member of Congress. And that's what these members are struggling with. Even if in their heart or in their head, they want to back away from the president, they're feeling pressure from their voters who still want to stick with him.
Yeah. Even after events of last week, and president's support, you know, took a hit among Republicans, but it's still, you know, he still has 60% of Republican Party voters saying that they're fully supportive. And there's still a majority, according to Pew, these numbers are, still a majority of Republican voters say the election was rigged, which is kind of insane when you consider how many court cases there have been saying the exact opposite.
Yeah, and some people might question whether they say, well, no, it's not really the president's party. And if it wasn't the president's party, if what I just said wasn't true, more than 10 people in the House would have voted to impeach him. But that dynamic still exists, at least the fear of President Trump either personally coming against them or on Twitter, the fear of his voters coming against them. And now we're seeing creeping in the fear of physical violence against them or their families creep in. So this is more, you know, this is a multi-layered problem that Republicans are dealing with.
Yeah. And I've been thinking about two of the people that have been, that helped, you know, basically foment some of that violence that we saw last Wednesday. And that's Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley. And Hawley in particular, because he was the first Republican senator to come out and say he was going to oppose the Electoral College count. And that was what set off the riots. And beforehand, there's a photo of him outside the Capitol in the morning, his fist raised in support of this angry mob that was about to sack the building. Hawley and Cruz did what they did because they're obviously eyeing a presidential run in 2024, and they want to get that Trump vote that you said may or may not be all that transferable. What happens to their political futures now? Are they kind of doomed, or will they be able to bounce back?
Well, I think first we have to see where this investigation goes into what happened on January 6th. I think I try to be an optimistic person, Jim, but I feel like this is only it's only going to get worse as we learn more. I think that's what's happening in the week plus since then. And so I think the ending of the investigation will help paint the significance of the event or how serious of it was. And then there will be fallout for people involved in different ways. And I do think we're seeing sort of an unprecedented number of senators being very specific about punishment or consequences for Senators Hawley and Cruz and that I don't remember. I mean, you know, we have experts on the CQ roll call team that are more authorities on the Senate itself than I am, but I haven't heard this type of rhetoric toward individual back and forth between individual senators before. But overall, I think you have Hawley and Cruz, ambitious senators who are looking ahead and trying to see where the Republican Party is, what it is now, and where it's going to go and how they can lead it. Again, now going back to this coalition, what I haven't seen is, Republicans have Trump has built this populist party. At least that's how Republicans see it, a populist party that is reaching out to minority voters. What I don't know how the coalition comes together is there is a piece of the Trump supporters that hate politicians, all politicians, Republicans and Democrats. They wanted to hang Mike Pence, Jim. Mm-hmm. And so what do those voters do? And I am skeptical that the people who hate all politicians, it's all the swamp, are just going to neatly come in line behind an Ivy League educated United States senator, one of whom clerked for Chief Justice John Roberts. I don't know that it's going to be that clean of a transition. Everyone's trying to figure it out. We can list all the people who want to be president coming up. What we don't know is what the primary voters are going to be looking for and how they react to President Trump over the next year, two, and 3 and 4 years beyond.
Yeah, and I was reading some of your older work, and you talked with an expert in the idea of loyalty. And one of the things he said was, you know, the real way to attack a cult of personality isn't to talk about the leader. It's to convince the people that might be in the his thrall that there's a a social sort of cost of doing it. And I was thinking about that today, especially given that, you know, we did see some Republicans finally say, like, this is insane, as, you know, there was a deadly attack on the Capitol. But others still haven't. And I'm wondering just what do you think will happen to the GOP if there isn't that full break towards denouncing some of the conspiracy theories and extremism that has, you know, become a hallmark of Trumpism.
Yeah, and I would encourage everyone can look up on Roll Call, you know, a couple of discussions that I've had with James Kane is the name of this loyalty expert. And I think what Republican Party, part of what it's going through right now is January 6th gave very visual elements to pieces of the coalition that might have been easy to ignore beyond. I mean, the coalition was kind of held together by, for multiple reasons, but for people who didn't like Trump's personality, they were appreciative of the judges or certain policies and tax cuts and whatnot. But now some of the Trump voters are forced to look at the guy who's beating up a police officer with an American flag, or the guy who is wearing a Camp Auschwitz sweatshirt, and say, they're looking and say, do I want to be involved in the same group as these guys? And that is I think that's a question that they're, you know, some Trump voters are wrestling with right now. We can talk about the post-Trump era, but we don't even know when that is, right? I mean, we have a fixed date of inauguration. That doesn't mean that he's going to be a non-factor, or that voters are instantly just going to turn off or turn away from him again, because he has become their champion. He is the businessman. He is the outsider. He's cleaning up the swamp. The reason why he's getting persecuted is because he's doing the right things. I mean, that's the mentality, and that just doesn't vanish in an instant.
Yeah, he has this weird hero narrative that has really taken hold there.
And if, Jim, if I could add, Trumpism, he can also, along that line, he can deliver attacks or deliver things in a way that is just so different. And I would argue, or it might not be as nasty. This is going to get me in a lot of trouble. But when other people try to duplicate Trump's personality, it just doesn't work. I mean, it comes off, I think, as meaner and nastier. And it just, they can't deliver it in the same way because they're not him, or they don't have the same, you know, the same persona. And so that's where Holly and Cruz, I think, get a little bit sideways with the whole thing too.
The other big unknown is what happens, even if the Republican Party does drum Trump out, what will happen? You know, what will he do? There's a chance that, you know, he decides to run as a third party. And does that become something like, you know, the Reform Party playing the spoiler in 1992 with Ross Perot at the head? Or does that subsume the GOP like the Republican Party itself wants to replace the Whigs, you know?
Well, if the Trump world, or if they are able to put together some sort of third party operation, then that would definitely hurt the Republican Party. I mean, right now, the Trump coalition as the Republican Party, that wasn't enough to win the White House, the Senate, or the House in the last elections. And so it has to expand in some way. So if you're talking about dividing it at all, that's only going to hurt the right side of the ideological spectrum in this country in terms of winning. But what can unite a party is the opposition, right? I mean, that eventually I could see the Republican Party coming together again against socialism and AOC and, you know, all of the terms and people that we've been talking about. But a lot of that depends on how much does President Trump continue to interject himself into the conversation and almost force these litmus test loyalty divides. And I don't think it's getting enough attention, but one way that Republicans can, I think, decrease the likelihood of him meddling in primaries against Republicans he doesn't like is to ban him from or prohibit him from holding future public office, you know, through the Senate trial and an impeachment process. Because I still don't believe that President Trump is really a Republican. Like, I mean, he has just used the Republican platform as a vehicle to get where he wants to go. So, and I think the only reason why he would meddle in primaries would partially be as a grudge, but partially to keep the Republican Party as a platform where he could continue to go somewhere else. So if that is taken from him, where he can't run again, so I think he would lose interest in really caring about the Republican Party. So that's, and I don't know the Republicans will go that far. I mean, I've been a little surprised that Leader McConnell has kind of let his indecisiveness be out there so publicly. I think that's very telling, but I don't know if they're going to get, you know, both get the 17 senators or go as far as prohibiting him from holding future office. That's a huge, I think that's a big deal in my mind.
Well, we will have to have you on again to try to figure out the answers to all these other questions, but there's only so much we can predict about the future. Nathan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Stay safe.
All right. Thanks. You too. Now let's turn to CQ's chief correspondent, Niels Lesniewski. Niels, I heard you got your hands on Biden's vaccine plans. What can you tell us?
Well, Jim, the biggest thing that the Biden team is planning to do pretty much right away is they are going to use the National Guard and the Federal Emergency Management Agency to try to set up federally run vaccine centers, community centers, to try and get more vaccines out to more populations more quickly. They have a goal of 100 million doses in the first 100 days. So that's 50 million people, because a lot of these vaccines require two shots. And so that is one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle that they're trying to do. The other thing is, it seems like they may want the CDC, when they replace the CDC director in less than a week, to somewhat streamline the guidelines for which population sets get the vaccine in which grouping.
Yeah, because up until now, the Trump administration has really let the states do whatever they want, which has led to a bit of confusion and really different approaches state by state, right?
That's right. And while the Biden administration will also be sort of deferring to the states, the summary of plan says that they basically think that it's time to move immediately into a phase where anyone who is 65 and older and anyone who fits a broad array of frontline personnel, from healthcare workers and those sorts of people who have already been vaccinated, but also to people who work in grocery stores, people who are K through 12 school teachers, that there's sort of a broad array of jobs that the Biden team thinks should be in the vaccination queue right now. And I think that some of that is that there are, while there is a shortage of or a limitation on the number of vaccine doses, there are also cases where there are places where the appointments aren't being filled or people just aren't showing up. And I think that that's why they're trying to broaden the base there.
Yeah, it's a race against time. It's trying to get them out as quickly as possible is what a lot of epidemiologists have been saying. So in addition to fighting the pandemic, Biden has a pretty busy week coming up. There's the inauguration on Wednesday. And before that, we'll start seeing hearings for his cabinet nominees. But the hearings are coming a little bit late this year compared to past, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we would normally expect to see this week a lot of those hearings having taken place in sort of a normal year. We would be looking at the possibility of confirmations happening immediately on the afternoon of January 20th, basically as soon as the president takes the oath of office and can get around to signing a bunch of paperwork and formally nominating people. It's not clear that things will move ahead quite that quickly this year. They may, but there are now a handful of hearings that are scheduled for Tuesday the 19th. The nomination hearings for Avril Haines to be the Director of National Intelligence, for Mayorkas to be Secretary of Homeland Security, for Tony Blinken to be the Secretary of State, as you know well, Janet Yellen to be the Treasury Secretary, and for General Austin to be the Secretary of Defense. Those are all now scheduled for the same day, for Tuesday the 19th. So there's going to be sort of a confirmation palooza going on the Senate side of the Capitol on Tuesday, which is partially because the Senate wasn't in session this week. It's partially because they have decided to actually observe the Martin Luther King holiday on Monday and not be in session and probably not be in town, frankly. But once those hearings happen, the confirmation process should speed up at least somewhat.
So we have that going on. And then on top of all that and the vaccine stuff, Biden also released this week his $1.9 trillion coronavirus rescue plan, and that is probably by far his top priority. It includes a bunch of long-term liberal legislative agenda items, things that they've really wanted for a long time, like a $15 minimum wage and a big expansion to the child tax credit. Republicans are already grumbling about it. But the big question is, will impeachment get in the way of tackling that and all this other stuff?
It might. The sense seems to be from Senate Democrats, at least those who are making public statements about this so far. Chris Murphy from Connecticut did an event with the Atlantic Council earlier this afternoon in which he said that the nominations and the COVID relief need to be the priority to the extent possible. And if they can figure out a way to delay the trial, to either do both at once or to delay the trial, they should do that. He said the trial shouldn't be delayed forever, that they should in fact have one at some point. But I think they are looking for an opportunity among the Senate Democrats to wait a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's a consensus there, right? Because I know Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who's going to be the incoming banking chairman, he said, earlier this week, Senate can walk and chew gum at the same time. They could handle impeachment, and they can also hold some hearings and get some nominees through the door and start work on some legislation. But I feel like that there are some hurdles to that.
The biggest hurdle procedurally that I can see is that if there is frustration and objection from the Republican side to doing two things at once, there are 30 hours allowed for debate after breaking a filibuster on a cabinet nominee. And so you are looking at the possibility where if you only have the morning to be considering nominations, because under the impeachment rules that we all became too familiar with last year, at 1 p.m., basically everything else stops for the impeachment trial. If you're in session in the morning, it would take a week just to get through that 30 hours of debate on a single cabinet nominee. So we might be looking at, months before they can fill the cabinet.
Yeah, that would certainly slow it down. And I guess it's that would be the first clear sign that Republicans were going to revert to their default position of obstructionism that they deployed at the start of the Obama presidency, right?
Yeah, that would sort of be the obvious signal. How much consensus there is in getting these nominees through and dealing with the impeachment trial, and even dealing with the minimum amount of COVID relief that possibly be dealt with at this point, is I think that's the open question that we're going to find out very quickly. Probably, I think we'll have a very good sense of that by Thursday of next week.
All right. Well, we'll have to talk to you on Friday again to see what happens. Niels, sounds like you're going to be extremely busy, so get some rest this weekend.
Thank you.
And that does it for this week of The Transition. I'm Jim Saxa. We'll be off this coming Monday, observing the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, but we'll be back on Tuesday. For all of us at CQ Roll Call, thanks for listening.